We're here ready to hear the case of Wright versus the Commonwealth. We're ready when counsel will.
May it please the court.
Mr. Cooley.
William Cooley here for the appellate. This case...
May I interrupt you? Do you care to reserve any time for rebuttal, sir?
5 minutes.
5 minutes, yes, sir.
And I'm sorry. This case, I have two assignments of error. The first one is about the police officer in this case testified to what he viewed on a videotape. And my argument was there was no foundation for that video given. I wasn't arguing that the videotape had to be in the courtroom. It wasn't. It would probably have been good if it had been, but it wasn't. But that, my argument wasn't that. It wasn't that they didn't provide the videotape for the court. It was just that he was testifying to something he saw on a video without, he wasn't there at the time, and so there needs to be foundation for that. Under Ferguson v. Commonwealth, which is about a 46-year-old case, but it hasn't been overturned, to my knowledge. The confusion lies in some of the other cases about videos. In those cases, such as Vinnie and Brown and Wilson, that have been cited to the record, it was a different type of authentication. And there's two ways to get a video or a picture into evidence. One is that somebody was actually there at the scene, took a picture, or someone else took a picture, and they said, well, yeah, that's what was going on.
It truly and accurately depicted the scene as it appeared at the moment.
Correct. But this is what Ferguson refers to as the silent witness, to which you have a video taken of something that was going on, and in that case, someone has to, according to Ferguson, substantiate that the machinery, whatever it was that was taking that picture or that video in this case, was actually working and was actually, you know, functional, and it was set for the time when this alleged crime occurred. That didn't happen in this case. In this case, we had an officer who went there sometime later and looked at the video, at which time I suppose someone from the store was there. But when we got to court, there was no one from the store there except someone who happened to become employed with that store sometime later, so she couldn't testify to anything that happened that day, obviously, and she admitted as much in the courtroom. So my argument is not about the best evidence rule, which some of these cases talk about. It doesn't apply at all, in my view. It's not about hearsay. I don't think that applies. And it's not about whether or not somebody brought the video to court. It's about this officer's testifying to something he watched on a video that did not have foundation. That's my primary argument here.
Would the foundation requirement be the same if the video were being offered into evidence as if someone, as is the case here, were just testifying about what they reviewed on the video?
Appellate doesn't believe that's the case. I think if you're offering the video into the courtroom, into the record, you still have to have the same foundation unless someone is testifying was actually there. As I said, in the Wilson case, the Brown case, and the Vinnie case that's been mentioned in the arguments by the Commonwealth, those cases all had people testifying about what they observed. You know, they were there. Right. I was here, and that we got this video that shows what happened when I was
Vinnie,
here.
The victim, whose purse was stolen, was certainly there.
Correct.
And could testify about it. But in Vinnie, doesn't the court, it's an unpublished, it's a, you know, not bonding opinion, but doesn't the court indicate that a foundation does not need to be laid for testimony about a video as opposed to perhaps the video itself? Someone who saw a video, or if you're standing in the street and you see images go across the screen on a television, for example, in a store window, that they could testify about what they saw.
I believe in Vinnie, the case was that the person was there, and that's what provided the foundation. I think absent that,
the officer wasn't there.
The officer that testified in the Wright case was not there.
But the officer in Vinnie wasn't there either, but the victim was.
Well, the victim provided the foundation was what I think that court held.
So your position is that because the victim was there, the victim established the foundation, and so it was unnecessary to do it again with the officer.
That's how I would view Vinnie. Once the foundation's laid, that this is an accurate representation of what happened at the time, then someone else could view it and testify about what he saw.
And in this instance, nobody could
testify. In the Wright case, there was no one there in the courtroom that was there at the time it happened, which is the whole problem. I mean, part of the problem, I guess, was that the store changed managers in the meantime, and so the original manager was nowhere to be found, which was actually a surprise to me, and I think the Commonwealth when we started court that day.
Even the judge, and I was trying to find it, even the trial judge commented that it was not the usual state of affairs.
Correct. It was an unusual case because there was a large discussion about the best evidence rule, which I didn't understand
You weren't challenging best evidence.
Yes, and I made that clear a number of times, but it didn't seem to dissuade the discussion. But that's neither here nor there. But to me, that evidence in this present case can't be used because it wasn't authenticated. And therefore, there was no competent evidence against my client, and the case should be dismissed for that. Secondly...
So on the sufficiency, ask you about that? As you know, on appeal, we have to consider the sufficiency of all the evidence that was admitted, whether it should have been admitted or not.
Okay.
There's a statute that says that after the Russian case a few years ago. The General Assembly made that pretty clear in the statute, as the Supreme Court said otherwise. And so, and the U.S. Supreme Court has said that generally you look at all of the evidence, whether it's properly admitted or not, to decide a sufficiency question.
Okay.
Looking at all of the evidence here, would you still argue that it should be dismissed?
Based on the sufficiency?
Based on the
sufficiency. Not much further. I'd say yes, because the officer's testimony was that he saw my client put something in his pocket.
An item.
And he also first, I think, indicated he thought it was a product from the store, but on cross-examination he admitted he didn't see what was taken. There was no one from the store there to say what was missing or taken. Even if they had been there, they may or may not have known that. There's all kinds of possibilities there. I mean, he could have laid something on the shelf and went shopping and went back and picked it up and put it in his pocket. It was something that it belonged to him. Beyond that, I don't think there's any evidence, although I'm not sure I can argue that because I'm not sure I made that specific objection, but they didn't prove he didn't pay for whatever he took out of there. There was no indication that he took it without permission. There was no one from the store who may have owned that item, whatever it may have been, to say that we were missing an item and that was my item and he took it and wasn't allowed to.
How did they come up with the figure that we see in the record?
I'm not sure. I think that happened in the General District Court. I think they just assumed it was a bottle of whiskey and they just made up a number.
Does a number matter when you're talking about concealment?
The number, you mean the
price?
Amount. No, it doesn't.
It can be anything, right?
As long as it belonged to the store. But just because it happened to be on the shelf, I would argue, doesn't mean it belonged to the store. He could have said it, like I said, he could have set something down there and shopped for 20 minutes and went back and picked it up.
Is that a reasonable inference from the record, though? Don't hypotheses of innocence have to flow from the facts in the record?
Well, I think it's the presumption of innocence should go with the defendant. I mean, maybe not on this point. I guess they're all reasonable inferences, but when you can't say what was taken, I don't see how you can come to the conclusion it was belonged to the store just based on the fact that he was there. And in any case, I don't think that there's enough evidence to support sufficiency of the evidence based on that.
Can I ask you, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot here, but I'm just reading your question to Deputy Shelton.
Okay.
And you said, just one, when you saw them reach on a shelf and pick up a bottle, you couldn't tell what it was. Is that correct? And he said, that's correct, sir. But it mentions a bottle.
Well, I may have been inarticulate there. Because, well, I guess he had referred to it as a bottle, but...
And he said it called it an item.
He called it an item.
I think helped him out a little bit.
Well, maybe, but you know, it could have. By the same argument, that probably wasn't the best way to ask a question on my part. But it could have been his own bottle, for that matter. Even if it was, I didn't know what it was. But the point is, they didn't know either. And to me, to prove somebody committed a larceny, you have to know what was taken. You have to have someone there that owned it and said, "Well, he took my stuff," and I don't think they had that. And then again, I think the video was improperly brought into the courtroom because there was no foundation. So that's what my argument is for now.
Right. Thank you. Thank you, sir. Mr. Curry?
Good morning, Your Honor. So may it please the court, Liam Curry on behalf of the Commonwealth of Virginia in this matter. Starting with the admissibility assignment of error, trial court did not abuse its discretion when it overruled Mr. Wright's objection to the officer's testimony for a lack of foundation. It was clear that the officer's testimony was both relevant and material to the criminal charge of shoplifting in this case.
But it was based on the video. Was any foundation required for him to be able to testify from the video?
Well, I think the best way to address that question, Judge Huff, is to say that Mr. Wright hasn't pointed to any authority that says that that supports his conclusion that additional foundational testimony was required other than what was given in the trial court. If I can refer to the record, Officer Shelton refers to the
reading from.
I apologize, Your Honor. It's appendix page 19, continues through page 20, I believe. Officer Shelton testifies that he reviewed the surveillance videotape in the back room of the ABC store using the ABC store's surveillance equipment. He testified that with considerable detail about what the video depicted. He states that it showed various portions of the store. He testified that he was certain that the video depicted the very store that he was within. He testified that specifically that the video depicted the whiskey aisle of the store that he had just walked through. He testified that it focused from the back of the store towards the parking lot area and showed some of the exit doors down the aisle that contains the whiskey, Canadian whiskey, and other items. So I think this testimony establishes that the video in question was of the store that he was in. And because he was responding to an alleged shoplifting incident from earlier that day, I think it's reasonable that there's a proper foundation laid that he can testify as to what that video contains.
What's the evidence that it was at that time of the incident as opposed to sometime earlier, days earlier, months earlier?
I think it's just that you have to rely on a reasonable inference from the record. He testifies that he was in that store for the specific reason to investigate a shoplifting incident that occurred earlier that day. He testified, I believe, that he arrived at the ABC store around 3:45 p.m., so I think it's reasonable to infer that he reviewed probably all of the footage from that day up until the time of his arrival to determine whether there was any evidence to support the allegation that he was there to investigate.
Can I ask you then on the sufficiency, Sonia Vera, too? If it's a reasonable inference, still an inference, and we don't know what he took, so isn't that an inference upon an inference, as opposed to an inference based upon facts that are shown to the court, proven to the court?
Well, I think the facts that are proven to the court, Judge Beals, include that the defendant entered the store and that he reached out and took an item off of the shelf and concealed it in his pocket. Now, just
assuming again that it's the time period, this isn't at some earlier time period, Judge Decker said.
That's correct, Your Honor. So I think from the officer's testimony that he's looking at the whiskey aisle of the store, and I think from his testimony further that while he's observing the conduct of the defendant on that aisle, he sees the defendant remove something from the shelf. I think it's clear from the record that everyone in the courtroom knew what that item was. And as you mentioned in your question to opposing counsel, Judge Beals, that defense counsel even referred to the item removed as being a bottle. And I think it's reasonable to infer that because of their testimony that he was observing the whiskey aisle, that the defendant concealed two bottles of whiskey that were ABC store goods, and that he concealed them.
You weren't involved with this at trial in any way, but there are numerous times that there's an attempt to question about this, and it's objected to and sustained because it would have been hearsay almost, certainly the way the question was asked, and then the Commonwealth never came back to those questions in attempting to say how the officer found out, who was there that day at the store, who might have provided information, even if you couldn't say what that person said, since there were no witnesses there from the store who even working there at the time. So it is really interesting to have to sort of rely on an inference upon an inference.
Your Honor,
is it an inference on an inference?
I would submit to this panel that the evidence established that the defendant removed an item from the shelves of the ABC store. I think the only inference that this court is required to find is that that item was an ABC store good. I don't think it is a reasonable inference in the absence of any evidence pointing in this direction that the item from the shelf of a mercantile institution was not an item that was for sale, that it was not an item that was the property of the ABC store.
Could the trier of fact have inferred from the mannerisms described by the officer about secreting it away in a pocket and the guy next to him, the friend, handing him something, would that be an inference that it is an item of the ABCs as opposed to their own personal items?
Can they infer from, I guess,
the behavior of
the
two
suspicious
individuals?
Nature. I think so. Nature. I mean, these were not individuals that were acting like, oh, will you hold my phone for me? Or, you know,
or I left my iPhone in the aisle, let me grab it.
Right. There's no evidence to support an inference that this was innocent behavior. A reasonable hypothesis of innocence must flow from the record, not from the imaginations of defense counsel. And I think that that's the argument in support of the hypothesis of innocence that's been presented to this panel in this case.
Can I ask you, where in the record it was established that appellant had a previous conviction, since the conviction order indicates that this is second offense larceny, and the warrant indicated he was charged under 103 and 104, 103 being the concealment, 104 the punishment for second offense larceny, and the conviction order says just 104, the punishment or conviction for second offense larceny.
It's very observant of the record, Judge Beals. There does not appear to be any evidence in the record that a prior larceny conviction was entered into evidence. However, I would note to this panel that issue was not raised in an assignment of error that has been granted by this court. That issue has not been raised in any argument on appeal. And so, because it wasn't raised below, it's waived by 5A18.
And it's not jurisdictional.
No, it's not jurisdictional, Your Honor. And
What about ends of justice?
I think this court has stated many times that it will not raise the ends of justice exception sua sponte, which it would have to in this case. I would state that that to show, I guess, a miscarriage of justice, this record would have to affirmatively show that the defendant did not have a prior conviction for larceny. I think at best this would show that the Commonwealth failed to prove it. Perhaps if there had been evidence that the parties agreed that there was no prior larceny conviction, and then there was an oversight that the second offense was still entered on the record, that would be evidence to show that the ends of justice could reach that issue.
Was the amount of punishment consistent with a first offense as well as a second offense?
I believe it was, Your Honor. For a second offense, I believe it creates a minimum sentence of 30 days, and I believe the trial court sentenced the defendant to 360 days, all suspended with credit for time served. So I believe that sentence would have been consistent with the first offense as well.
So the first offense could also be a sentence up to 365 days, like a second offense?
I don't have that statutory authority in front of me, Your Honor. I hesitate to misspeak and assert something that I don't know for certain, but my understanding is that it would not have affected the sentence in this matter, but without the code in front of me, I wouldn't be able to state with absolute certainty. I don't know if the court has further questions for me.
On the laying the foundation
yes, sir.
Of the video or the authenticity of it for the time of the video, what is your argument in response to opposing counsel's argument that it simply was not done and it had to be done, that this is different from Brown, certainly, but even different from this court's unpublished decision, memorandum opinion, in Benny?
Commonwealth's argument on that issue, Your Honor, would be that this case is not distinguishable from Vini in any significant manner.
And in Vini, the victim was present the whole time that her purse was stolen when she was distracted in the store. And she stayed there until she saw the video. The officer came later, as in this case, but there was testimony from someone who was there at the time. Here we don't have testimony from anyone who was there at the time.
I agree with Your Honor that that's a factual distinction. I think the court's holding in Vini makes it clear that that distinction has no bearing on its outcome. In that case, the court found that Vini claimed to be advancing a different argument, that the Commonwealth did not prepare an adequate foundation for the admissibility of the two witnesses' testimony about the contents of the surveillance video. Because the necessary foundation for the admission of the video images includes testimony from a witness with personal knowledge that they fairly and accurately depict what occurred, Vini argues the introduction of the videotape must be a necessary prerequisite to verbal testimony about the contents of the tape. So essentially the argument was you need the foundation arguments to admit the tape. And I believe that is what counsel's argument is on appeal, that regardless of whether the tape is admitted, the same foundational arguments are required. And I think that position was...
For a witness simply to testify about what they saw on the tape, as opposed
right.
to for the tape itself.
Correct. As long as the... I think it would be a different situation if the defendant, if the witness just says, I heard that this tape contains this, then that witness wouldn't have any personal knowledge of what is on the tape. I think if the witness describes what is on the... having testified that he has observed the tape, is free to testify as to what that tape contains and what that witness personally observed.
And is your theory behind that, that the witness can then be cross-examined thoroughly about what he saw, so there's really no problem, especially since the video doesn't come in?
That's correct, Your Honor, and that's what the panel in Vini argues, is that the adversarial process will kind of weed out abuses of the admissibility of this type of testimony. I believe opposing counsel referred to the silent witness rule, but in this case, the video didn't testify at all. This was a person testifying to what he personally observed and what he had personal knowledge of. And in the absence of any other authority, to suggest that that type of testimony requires any additional foundation to be admissible in the trial court. I don't think that this panel can conclude that the trial court abused its discretion when it found that it was admissible in this case.
Can I ask you the same question I asked your opposing counsel, Mr. Cooley? That on page 2 of the joint appendix, there's the notes from the officer, and he describes, and this was in general district court, he describes the value of the merchandise as $25.48. Is that anywhere in the record that we could tell that from the trial?
No, I don't believe value was proven. I would note for the panel that this is as a misdemeanor. The only thing that the Commonwealth was required to prove that it was a good or merchandise of some value, and I think it's reasonable to conclude that anything that is being offered for sale is of some value, which is why there's no minimum value listed in the code. The code only requires, I guess it would have been $200 at the time of this offense, now $500 be proven for a felony conviction under that statute. But presumably at one, the criminal complaint reflects at one time that there was a better record of precisely what the value was, but for whatever reason the Commonwealth did not provide those exact specifics in the trial court. I see that my time is up. If the court has no further questions, I simply ask this court to affirm the judgment of the trial court.
Very well. Thank you, sir. Mr. Cooley, your rebuttal. And as you're coming, let me ask a question so as to make good use of your time. Since the video was not offered into evidence, and since the evidence that came from the investigating officer was both probative and relevant, why wouldn't the any shortcomings on laying a foundation for the video simply go to the weight of the evidence that the officer gave as opposed to its admissibility?
Your Honor, my argument is the officer had no knowledge of the case except what he got from the video and perhaps was told by somebody else at the time, which was hearsay and not admissible. I think at one point he started to say what the then manager told him, but I objected and it was sure put out. So he had no personal knowledge other than the fact that he recognized the guy, which from other incidences or endeavors. Just to briefly answer, it was a second offense larceny charge, and it was my fault for not objecting to that because I think we were thinking about so many other things. They didn't offer it the evidence of his prior convictions in the trial, so it was a mistake by myself, the Commonwealth, and perhaps the court for missing that part of it. Yeah. As far as the authority, as mentioned a couple times by...
We appreciate your candor on that.
Pardon me?
I would appreciate your candor on that.
Well, authority for what I'm arguing is Ferguson v. Commonwealth, which was a case that set up this whole principle of what the foundation is supposed to be for pictures and videos. I don't see anything in the current arguments that says this case was overturned, and what it says is you have to have someone with knowledge of how the machinery or whatever it is. I mean, it probably was a lot different in 1972 than it is today, but still you have to have someone to offer that it was working in order and operating properly, which goes to the same answer Judge Stecker asked, is how do you know it didn't happen a month ago, 2 weeks ago, the next day? I mean, the only way for him to know, I guess we know it didn't happen after because he'd already seen it. And the fact that he, offered I was there to investigate a shoplifting, I think that probably went away with an objection to hearsay on that too, because all we know is he went there without the testimony of the manager at the store. As far as, to me, even in the Vinny case citing Wilson, on page 5, first full paragraph says, held that adequate foundation is laid for the introduction of surveillance videotape into evidence when a witness with personal knowledge testifies that the video fairly and accurately depicts what occurred. So even in the cases that the Commonwealth is offering, it says this has to happen, and it didn't happen.
Bottom line, this guy had no personal knowledge.
He had no personal knowledge, and he brought no one to court to say, yeah, that's a video that I gave him, and I was there, and I run the machine, and I know it worked.
And the video was never introduced, so you don't have a time and date stamp or anything.
Well,
like that.
Even if we had it without the, even if there's a time and date stamp without someone saying they knew the machine was working right, it would mean nothing, because the time and date stamp isn't always accurate. The machine's not operating properly. As far as, you know, assuming and inferences, I would call some of that speculation, but whether it was his own item he picked up off of the shelf, it could have been something that was free for all we know. People, stores, I mean, probably not so often in an ABC store, but there's but sometimes there's free items on a store. No one, without the manager that was there at the time, to say, hey.
But the law is that hypothesis of innocence must flow from the facts in the case. And there's no facts in the case that would suggest that there were free items there or that he had left his iPhone or anything like that, correct?
My time's elapsed, Mayor. I agree. I mean, I'm not sure what it looked like because I never saw the video either. But we don't know what exactly it looked like, whether it looked like he's picking up his own phone or the other guy picked up his phone for him or he picked up a bottle of whiskey. We don't know what it was because we don't have a video and we don't have anyone competent to testify to what was going on there.
What we know, I guess, I'm asking if you agree with this, is this your argument that the officer testified the video was of the store that I walked through, that I knew Mr. Wright and even knew the gentleman who was with him because I'd served a warrant on him about 10 days before, but we don't know what was taken off the shelf or when.
Correct. My argument is that any testimony by the officers to what was on that video is not competent testimony. Perhaps that it was the same store, just where it looked like it, based on these observations, but he can't say what happened when this was going on because there just isn't anything to substantiate, provide the proper foundation for that.
All right. Thank you very much. We'll step down, as is our custom, in